Welcome back, everyone, to the Mainland Podcast. This is episode 19. I'm Michael Citro from themainland.com, the managing editor, and joining me this week, our intrepid historian, Kevin Mercer. Kevin, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
Cannot complain. We're in the midst of some W's, which is good. Lions are getting some victories. And so I guess we're going to start off by talking a little bit about the Colorado Rapids, even though it seems like a long time with these fixtures all squished together. Orlando City with a 2-0 victory over Colorado. Let me get your overall impressions of the game.
I think it was a very mature game for Orlando. Colorado is a good team, but they're not performing well this season. And we came out with a dominant performance and did not let them into the game really at all. And I thought it was a pretty accurate showing of kind of where we're at right now, to be honest.
Yeah, Adrian Heath said they could have had a lot more goals, and you got to agree that, you know, Orlando didn't take all of its chances. I think it was 0-0 at the half,
yeah.
And I know Kaká had hit the post on one occasion. There were a number of really good key passes into the box that ended up, you know, wide or getting saved. Clint Irwin had a pretty heroic game in goal for Colorado, I thought, and you know, the Rapids are, they're not a good team, but they're a hard team to break down and score on.
Yeah.
And for Orlando to get a couple was huge. Adrian said before the game he wanted to get a goal and get Colorado out of their, you know, shape, make them change the way they play the game. Wasn't able to get that early goal, but they did get one in the second half and then tacked another one on later. It was a bit of a coming out party for one Colombian man named Carlos Rivas.
He's having a good week, isn't he?
He's had a really strong 8 days or so, yeah. So Rivas was very dominant against Colorado. They had absolutely no answer for his speed out on the left wing. He made maybe one of the best five all-time crosses I've ever seen of the ball to set up Kyle Larin for a goal. And so Kyle Larin keeps scoring, keeping that, you know, rookie of the year favoritism going. And, you know, and the captain got a goal, also based in part on a great play by Carlos Rivas, who laid off to Christy Higuita and then took off to the left and took two defenders with
right.
him, allowing Higuita had like a, I don't know, like a 40-yard run with the ball.
Yeah.
And then just the threat of Rivas on the left had everybody leaning that way, and Higuita just slides it over to, you know, Kaká on the right. And from a pretty tough angle, it's hard to beat a good goalkeeper, and Kaká managed to make it look easy.
Yeah, I actually want to talk about that goal because, you know, watching it, I actually was home for that game. I had some other things going on that evening. I actually stayed home and watched it on TV. And you could see on the TV angle that he actually – it was the first time I've seen Kaká look determined to say, basically, I'm going to score no matter what you do. And it was kind of cool to see that happen for him because I think we expect that from him. We expect a player of his talent and his stature to really be able to come in and control a game. And I think this was one of the first times I've really seen him just basically decide that he, you know, the composure that a world-class player like he's going to have, it was fantastic. I thought it was a fantastic goal, and he really – shouldn't have scored it, but did because of his skill. So
the thing about Kaká is we were just starting to talk about how he was a little bit in a run of poor form for him. The Montreal game was maybe one of his worst games I've ever seen, not just in Orlando City uniform, but in any uniform.
Right.
Really, really tough night for him. He came back against Colorado extremely determined, running very, very hard all night long, challenging for every ball, taking guys on, and just willing his team to win and really looking the part of a captain.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, again, I think you see, and we always have this kind of, I don't know if it's a running joke or if it's a fear. We fear these guys come over here and are here to retire, are here to kind of just collect a paycheck and run the field a bit. And I think you see with a player like Kaká that he really is a consummate professional who's coming back, again, like you said, after a rough game, and really coming back determined and really single-minded, and like I said, willing his team to win in a lot of ways. I think a lot of players played well, but I think Kaká as the captain, I think they all looked to him. And, yeah, I thought it was a phenomenal game for us.
Yeah, it's nice to see a player of that stature say, I'm not going to have a run of bad form. I'm going to have a bad game here and there, but I'm going to bounce back, and I'm going to make sure that the next game does not happen.
Right.
And that's what he did against Colorado. And honestly, it didn't really seem to matter what the Rapids did. Orlando City had a very good game plan. They went after them and held the ball, got a lot of possession, got a lot of good scoring chances, if not for Clint Irwin and the post and a couple of misses just barely wide. It could have been really a laugher. I mean, it was not a close game.
No, it wasn't. You know, I think, too, another aspect of the game that maybe might go unnoticed a little bit was just how strong our defense was. They had 13 crosses into the box, and none of them connected, which I think is a fantastic statistic. And mm-hmm. and their passing in the final third was also really poor, due to us. Again, I think that, you know, you see that back line of, again, we were fearful of that coming into the season. That might be our weak spot. But I think, again, you show with Tally Hall organizing them how strong they can really be.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a particularly good game for Seb Hines. St. Ledger had a good game as well, although he had one really horrific turnover that led to a breakaway.
We always have one bad turnover, I think, per game back there, just to scare us all.
Yeah. Darwin Serin had a little bit of a struggle, I thought, in that particular game. He had, by my count, he had 5 turnovers, and 2 of them led to very good scoring chances. But he did play better in the second half, and he continued his good breakup play. He just had a few gaffes that were uncharacteristic of him, and he would, as we all saw, bounce back.
Right.
Really strong game for Iguita, very strong game for Rivas. Both picked up their first MLS assist in that match. And I think we can just basically put a bow on it. Colorado came in, and Orlando City just took it to them.
I think you're completely right. I don't think they ever had a chance in that game.
So we'll turn our attention back to the U.S. Open Cup, and we welcomed a familiar foe to the Citrus Bowl this week, Tuesday night, the Columbus Crew, which was, of the 3 teams that were in the pot, that was the toughest draw we could have got. What made it a little bit easier was that Columbus played Saturday night in Salt Lake City, and they came out and decided they were going to try to make do with more of a reserve lineup, and Orlando City had the weekend off and decided to come out and go for the win and played, you know, pretty much a starting group other than the guys that are missing, you know, for injuries or for international duty, except for Lewis Neal, who was also not dressed. But, I mean, they had some reserves dressed like Tommy Redding and Tyler Turner, but pretty much they went with a mostly A lineup.
Yeah.
And Columbus, I thought the first half and the second half, the first 10 to 12 minutes of both halves were easily the better team, but they were not able to capitalize on that early momentum and those early chances they got in both halves. And other than those, you know, maybe 24 minutes of the game, I thought Orlando City really, again, handled them.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate description of the game. I thought, you know, I think the first 10 minutes, it was nerve-wracking, to be honest. I thought, gosh, here we go again. We got a number of, kind of strange calls for them in terms of yellow cards and, yeah, things that maybe I've seen now, and I rewatched the game this morning and did realize that a couple of them were yellow cards, but still kind of some, you know, questionable plays and some kind of good Columbus luck early on to kind of drive them into some good free kick positions. So it was a little bit nervous at first, but then as time went on, I think that, again, you saw kind of the same attitude you saw against Colorado, just as a very professional team come out and really take care of business.
Aaron Schoenfeld hit the crossbar early in the game with a header that could have really changed the complexion of the game. As they say, goals change games.
Yeah,
that's a favorite saying of Adrian Heath. But it did not go in, and Orlando City was able to get a foothold in the game and a goal from Kaká once again,
mm-hmm.
His first U.S. Open Cup goal. And then we just got an absolute screamer of a goal from Carlos Rivas. His first goal from open play, and he's now got 4 U.S. Open Cup goals, and he's tied for the lead in this year's U.S.
I knew he had to get there pretty high up there, yeah.
Yeah, so he's in the running for the Golden Boot, and this is a guy who's had trouble cracking the lineup, but he's really coming on of late. He's starting to I think you're seeing a guy who finally has gotten several consecutive weeks of training with the team in. He's feeling better about himself. He's settling in finally to MLS and life with Orlando City, living outside of his native Colombia, and he's starting to adapt. And the team is really embracing him. It's nice to see their reaction to him when he does something well because they know how hard he's been trying.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, too, you know, it's really funny with all the transfer rumors floating around and people kind of saying, well, maybe we can cut Rochez or Rivas from our DP lineup and you know, give him a demotion or something. And then all of a sudden, the last couple of days, I've seen people kind of just go, you know, maybe Rivas is worth it. You know, maybe he's worth this money we're paying for him. And I think that's good to see that. You know, there were some people, and I don't think it was wise to question the way they were, but, you know, people were questioning how valuable these players were. And you started to realize they're pretty valuable players, and they're going to be big for us as time goes on. And like as you say, as they get more time on the practice field and are able to acclimate both the team, the region, you know, living in Florida, you know, a lot of different things here going on that are different than Colombia. So, I think he's going to be a very valuable player for us moving forward.
Let's call it what it is. I mean, a lot of our readers and listeners and a lot of our fans hated the guy.
Yeah.
They hated Rivas. Yeah. They didn't want to see him because he'd go out on the field. He might go down too easy once or twice. He'd take a shot from 40 yards away and sky it into the
20th row. I gave him a hard time for not passing for a long time.
and he was just trying to do too much is basically what was going on and trying to earn his way instantly into the upper echelons of the team, and that's not going to happen. You have to take some time. As Adrian Heath said something interesting, he said he didn't care really if it took a year for him to get going. He signed a 5-year deal, and it was like they were just going to give him his opportunity, however long it took, because they saw the talent. You know, Adrian Heath, Paul McDonough, the GM, they saw the talent. They went to. You know, they went to see Deportivo Cali multiple times. They did a very thorough scout job. There were very big clubs around the world interested in his services. And Orlando City managed to land him, you know, ahead of all these others. So as young as he is and as raw as his talent is, you know, they were going to be patient and bring him along however long it took. And I think – I already see our commenters changing how they feel about him because, I mean, let's face it, we live in a very much what have you done for me lately society.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen people turn on different players this year and turn their opinion in from, you know, one game to the next. And, you know, soccer is a game where you can have a bad day and not be a bad player.
Right.
Or you can have a very good day and not be a good, particularly good player.
Well, and you know, I think too, MLS parity also, we talk about this a lot, but I think that, you know, in a league that's so competitive, a bad game can turn really bad really fast. You know, if you're playing for Manchester United and you've got a bad, you know, you've got a bad outing versus Leicester City, I don't think anyone really notices that much. But, you know, in a league that where, you know, even Colorado is a, you know, pretty decent team comparatively, or Columbus in this case. I think you can have a bad game and people will notice it real easily. It becomes very, very apparent. And like we said with Kaká against Montreal, again, you know, a player that is normally very, very good but has a rough night and it looks a little bit worse because the other team's pretty good as well.
It happens to everybody. I mean, you and I are both Manchester United fans, yeah. Right? So how many times have you seen Wayne Rooney have a really horrible game or Robin Van Persie? It happens.
Often. Very, very often.
Yeah. I mean, way too often, obviously, the last couple of years. But, even the elite players can have an off game. And it might be a little nagging injury that we don't know about. It might be that, there's things going on in their life that sort of are affecting them mentally, just kind of on the subconscious level. It could be that they're trying to do too much. There's a number of reasons it could happen. It could be the way that the defense is playing them, and they get frustrated. I mean, there are so many reasons why a player can have a bad game. But, you know, the good players, you know, the cream of the crop, they rise, and they have more good games than bad games.
I think
the problem with these guys that we're talking about, and also guys like Carlos Rivas and Kaká, is they're counted on for offense.
Yeah.
So it's very noticeable when they don't produce. Whereas maybe it's not as noticeable if a center back doesn't produce, because maybe you give up a goal, but hey, most teams give up about a goal a game anyway.
Right. Yeah, I think so, and I have a lot of sympathy because I've played my entire life, but I've certainly had plenty of bad games and missed plenty of goals I should have shot and should have scored, and so I have a lot of sympathy for players as well because I can relate to it. I had a bad game Sunday, so it's hard for me to give Rivas a hard time sometimes because I had a rough game too. So yeah.
So before we get to man of the match, I want to just talk a little bit more about the U.S. Open Cup, and it looked to me like. Certainly, you have to look at the big picture, but obviously Columbus didn't come in either thinking that they needed to play their A lineup, or maybe they didn't take the competition as seriously as they might have. It looked to me like Adrian Heath, well, in some respects, he didn't have much of a choice on who he played because of injuries and international duty, but it looks like Orlando is taking the rest of this competition very seriously after a... let's call it a struggle at Charleston.
Yeah. Well, I think, and he said he basically puts the lineup on that he thinks can win that week. And I think that, Charleston, he may have underestimated Charleston a little bit. I think Columbus has a lot. Columbus is in a rough position because they're really competing for that playoff spot. They're right below us, if I recall correctly, and not solidly below us. They're kind of fading a little bit. And they've had a couple of ties recently as well, I think. So I think you've got a team there who's really kind of maybe focusing on the league a little bit. And whereas I think Orlando, I think this is a good opportunity for us to win this year, to bring, I think we all feel good about the season, but I'm not sure we all feel good about the fact that we're going to bring home the MLS Cup. I'm not sure I feel that good about it. But I do feel like the U.S. Open Cup's available. I think it's available to all of us, all the teams. And certainly our path goes through Chicago now. It's not a bad place to go for us right now. We played pretty well there before. And, so I think that, and it's a one-off game. It's someone's going to walk away a winner. So I think it's a great opportunity for the team. For a fan base that's used to trophies and for a fan base that wants trophies, I think the new fans are eager to be, they've seen these players and have gotten behind them. I think that this is a town that would love to see a trophy come home. It would be Orlando's first major trophy, to be honest.
And beyond the trophy, you get to go play in Champions League.
Yeah, which I think is a lot of fun too. Again, another competition that Americans don't seem to totally get behind, but I find it fascinating. I mean, the Open Cup I find fascinating as well. I was surprised we had a low turnout last night, because I thought it was a fantastic game, a fantastic evening, great night for soccer, and a great, great competition as well. So yeah, I'm hoping the city fans get behind the competition as well, because I think it's gonna be a good one for us in the end.
Yeah, it was 13,000 and change last night. Not a great crowd by Orlando City standards. Surprisingly, the second highest attended game in U.S. Open Cup this year.
That made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. So even when our small crowds are still among the best, which is nice. And the previous week when we played Colorado, it was a fairly small crowd for Orlando. It was between 20,000 and 25,000. I think it was around 23,000 something. And it was the second largest midweek game of the year in MLS. So, congratulations, Orlando. You're doing a good job.
Yeah.
So why don't we get your man of the match for both Colorado and Columbus?
So, go back to Colorado. I think Colorado, I'd give it to Kaká. I think he had the kind of game he needed to have to help us win that game. There were certainly other players in the running, but I think Kaká wins at that for that one. Last night, I've got to give it to Rivas. I thought there were a lot of great performances last night. But I think at the end of the day, I got to give it to Rivas. I think he had a fantastic game, and I think he deserves it. I think he really, all the maybe the critiques he's gotten from everyone, I was really happy that he was actually the official man of the match as well for the club, and I was happy to see his face up there. I thought he earned that. So, how about you?
I'm going to go with Rivas for Colorado. I thought he was just a tour de force against the Rapids. I know Kaká had more shots and more. shots on goal, but and he was the one that got the goal. Rivas got the assist. But I thought Rivas, when he came on for Breck Shea, because Breck Shea got injured in that game, I thought at that point it was a fairly pedestrian game. And then when Rivas came on, the entire energy of the game shifted. And that's when Orlando started to really get forward, get chances, and I don't I just feel so bad for the poor right back that Colorado threw out there and right wing because they could not handle his speed and pace, and when he would change pace, he would just flick the ball ahead, take two steps, and he was 3 yards behind the defender.
Right.
Like every time. It was really amazing to watch. That cross was just, man, you couldn't even like put that cross in a Hollywood movie because it was that good.
It was a good cross. It was really good.
It just curved right around the defense, right. It was like a magnet onto the foot of Kyle Larin. It was just beautiful. So I thought Rivas.
And a good finish for Larin, too.
Very good finish, yes. But he didn't have a whole lot to do. Once he got to the ball, it was like, just missed the keeper and it's in. Now, we've seen him miss those before, so rookies, you know. In the Columbus game, I will say that I thought. Maybe I would give that to Sean St. Ledger.
Okay.
For Columbus.
That was a really good save he had. We didn't talk about that, did we?
No, we didn't. Yeah, that's right. Kristen Steindorsen floats a ball from the left side. It's just a chip, basically. It goes over Tally Hall. It's headed for the right corner of the goal. And St. Ledger comes out of nowhere running full speed toward his own net to head it right off the line. And then goes crashing into his own net. It was beautiful. Tally Hall raved about it after the game, as he should. And it was a special play. But I thought, other than that, considering the fact that Columbus loaded up with really tall players, I thought he and Seb Hines were very, very good in terms of keeping them from using that height advantage to score goals, because they had a lot of set pieces early.
They did. They had 19 shots on goal in that game too. You know, I think that we kind of say that they had a weakened lineup, but it also shows their depth. They've got a very deep team. They played pretty well. And I think you're right about the defense and St. Ledger really holding them back a lot. So.
Adrian Heath raves about Greg Berhalter, and I agree with him. I think Greg Berhalter is one of the better minds in the game in this league. I think that Columbus is very well coached. I think they have a lot of good players. And like you said, they do have depth. When you can sit guys like Ethan Finley and Justin Miram, but play a Kristen Steindorsen and guys like Schoenfeld and Bedell, I think it just shows you. I mean, Orlando City doesn't have that kind of depth.
We really don't, no. We really don't. And I hope my all my critics in Columbus heard that I just gave them a compliment. I hope that we can broadcast that somehow.
Well, you know, they're going to take it out on all of us because of what Andrew said. And that's just going to be the way it is forever and ever and ever. That's going to be the one piece of clickbait that sticks in their mind. So, 7 unbeaten at home in a row. Orlando City is making the Citrus Bowl into a fortress, aren't they?
They really are, and with the amount of people we pack into that place weekly, it should be. It really, really should be. I know that when I'm in there, I'm not gonna talk on the phone or really even be able to talk to my friends too far away. It's a loud place to play, and it's a hot place to play. I think if you're not from Florida and you haven't been practicing here week in and week out, it's easy to maybe, in the evening it kind of cools down in the stadium, it feels a little bit better, but on that field it's extremely hot, and I think a team like from Columbus or Colorado is really, really going to suffer out there. I mean, even the LA Galaxy, I always point back to this idea that LA Galaxy, they were complaining about the heat, and they're from LA, they're from the desert. So,
yeah.
So I think the fans and the heat, I think, are a great combination for us to really, really get a great home field advantage. So,
yeah, it took a little while to get that first home win, as the team was still learning to gel and come together. But now it seems like a combination of things. The team is playing more as a team now, and we're now hitting the hotter part of the summer.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely miserable for people who are not used to that.
Oh yeah,
if you're not used to running around in that, it's terrible. I think it was Eric Avila told me that one of the Galaxy players said, "How do you play in this?"
Yeah,
and day in and day out. And I think it's certainly a chance for Orlando City to have a good home field advantage in games if they can stay close, hang around, and grind it out to the second half when the other team starts to wilt. And that we've seen that. We've seen, two goals against Colorado in the second half the other night, last week. They did get two in the first half against Columbus and sort of – they still got some good chances in the second half. They just didn't add to their lead. It's nice to see that, teams are not going to just walk into the Citrus Bowl and expect 3 points. It's going to be a battle.
Yeah, I think that when you look at the schedule coming up too, I think that every game we have come up is winnable. Even against good clubs, I think with the home field advantage, I think we've got a definite home field advantage. I think with supporters groups as well. I think that, you've noticed, and I think I've noticed even in the USL games that we always want to play away from the supporters groups the first game and put, our goalie in front of the supporters groups and put their goalie in front of the supporters groups in the second half. That's what we want to do. That's our ideal way of playing. And I think it really, really does work because, just that wall of noise coming off of those guys. I sit near them. I sit kind of in the ability to kind of watch them. The wall of noise and just constant, flags and chants and just almost complete chaos, to really be honest, I think really has to grind on you. Even if you're a professional, I think you really eventually feel it. So.
And it buoys the home team.
Yeah.
It really does. It lifts their spirits when they hear them. And they can hear them because, usually I'm up in the press box and it's got a very, very thick plate of glass in front of it designed to knock out noise. And still, you can hear roar.
Hear it, yeah.
Yeah, you can. The wall does a phenomenal job, and it's nice to have them on our side.
You have to imagine too, taking a corner kick. We're down a goal or we're looking for a goal, taking a corner kick on that end, with all those fans behind you, and I think it's really going to lift your spirits a little bit, and you're really going to hear it. So yeah, I think you're exactly right.
So why don't we now bring in our guest? We're going to talk about our upcoming match Saturday night, the 4th of July. 10 p.m. Eastern start time, which is not ideal for us. Everybody's going to be out at the fireworks.
Well, they go watch fireworks and get home early.
Yeah, against Real Salt Lake on the 4th of July. And they're going to have fireworks at Rio Tinto after the match there, so they're expecting a big crowd. We're going to bring in our guest now to talk about that. And keep in mind that there might be some things that sound a little weird because we recorded our interview before the Tuesday night match against Columbus. So let's go to our guest right now. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast is Matt Montgomery. He's the managing editor of RSL Soapbox, one of our fine sister SB Nation blogs. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So I wanted to kind of pick your brain about Real Salt Lake. We're going out there for a 4th of July extravaganza, which starts at 10 o'clock p.m. our time, which is going to be fun to cover that one.
That's the value of actually traveling to the match. Then you don't have to, you stay up till 10 o'clock, but, time zones or something.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to just ask you about a little bit of a basic overview of your team for those of our listeners who are not familiar with Real Salt Lake. Your basic formation and your basic sort of tactics that that you guys like to employ.
So on a very basic level, it's actually been kind of a weird season in that regard. Historically, Real Salt Lake, since maybe 2008, mid-2008, employed the 4-4-2 diamond, and everybody talked about it nonstop until Caleb Porter came around and kind of rescued us from that monotony with his Porter ball or whatever it's become now. But 2015 has been a little different, and we saw signs of it in late 2014, in that now we're playing, we're switching formations, which was like a once-a-year, twice-a-year special occasion type thing in the past. Now it's a little more, it's normal and it's kind of weird. But we play either like a 4-1-2-3 or 4-1-3-2 or occasionally like a 4-5-1 or, but anything you could encompass under like a 4-3-3 at its most basic core, I think is what Real Salt Lake's playing now. And at this point, it's kind of, if it gets us points, then I think anybody would be happy right now.
Excellent. I was just wondering, just looking at the matchup on July 4th, in terms of defense, midfielders, and strikers, where do you think the strength of the club's going to come from?
I mean, the strength is definitely kind of unactuated right now, I think, actually. What you see are, like, our defense could be very strong, but it's been, you know, in and out of injury. We have Chris Schuler and Hamison Olave, who have both had, you know, fairly significant layoffs in the last few weeks. And so we're forced to play these young players who could be very good, but it's just, it's not quite there yet. The midfield, it's another one of those circumstances where we've got Kyle Beckerman, who is obviously, you know, solid. He's good. And that's not really going to change, hopefully. And I'm sort of praying that that's the case, that he is good for maybe a good 10 years. We'll see about that one. But we have players like Luke Mahal and Luis Skill, who consistency is not their strength. And there's Javier Morales, who is fantastic. I think you've seen this week in, week out when he's actually playing. The problem has just been, like, he's just missed some matches here and there. One, because of concussion, and that's something that can happen to you regardless of age. And two, because he got kind of a silly red card. And I could debate the call if I wanted to, but his call against New York, just, you know, that red card, it's the sort of thing that kind of describes our season. And you see that with the forwards, too, who we have Joao Plata, who has been, he's been injured most of the season, but was really good last year. We have Alvaro Sabrio, who we've got some internal problems with right now. Devin Sandoval, who's a young, exciting, like, solid player, potentially, but isn't there yet at this point in his career. Sebastian Jaime, who's still adapting to MLS. Olmes Garcia, who's got lots of potential, just isn't showing it all yet. And I think, like, maybe I'll veer away from those and just say our most solid position right now is goalkeeper.
Sorry, Mike, I wanted to bring something up on that real fast about the goalkeeper. We've been frustrated by a lot of really good goalkeepers. Do you think that Nick Romano is going to frustrate us on the fourth?
I am absolutely certain he won't, because he's already going to be with the national team.
Oh, okay.
We do have Jeff Atchinella. He's a Florida kid, you know, somewhere in Florida. I think Tampa Bay, maybe not. You know, one of those areas. I don't actually know Florida super well, so you can yell at me when we're off air if you like, or on air. That's fine too. But Jeff Atchinella is a very solid second goalkeeper, and he's held that spot now for 3 years and done quite well with it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, I was before I was rudely interrupted by Kevin Mercer.
My apologies.
I was actually going to ask about Kyle Beckerman, and you brought him up, and I was going to ask, you know, what kind of losses is Real Salt Lake expecting for this game in terms of people out for the Gold Cup? We know we're going to be missing Kyle Larin, who has already departed for the Canadian team, and Darwin Saren is going to be leaving for the El Salvador team. Breck Shea did not get picked by the U.S. men's national team because he's hurt, so we don't get him, and he's not going. So I was just kind of wondering what kind of boat you guys are in.
So it's kind of a weird one right now. Kyle Beckerman obviously is a loss. Nick Romano obviously is a loss. Both of those players are kind of central to how we play. Obviously, you can watch Nick Romano's shot stopping, and it's good on any given day. His stopping from distance along the ground is not always the best, but everything else he excels. And so we'll miss him, and there's not really getting around that. With Kyle Beckerman, it's a little different. Because we have no, like, crew replacement for him in the system. And it's hard when the player is that central to how you play, I think. Just because, you know, Kyle Beckerman is – there's just not a lot of players like him in this league. And I think we see that on the national level, too. He serves a role that nobody fulfills really particularly well at that level. And so we'll play a player like maybe John Sturzer, who is kind of learning that role, but he's a third-year MLS player. He spent his first 2 years basically out with injury, various injuries, and I don't know. It's at a point right now where on a game by game basis, I might feel okay about it. But when I look at the whole Gold Cup, it eats at me a little bit, and I can't give you a straight answer because I just don't honestly know.
Okay, fair enough.
So, do you guys have a plan for Kaká?
I would normally say Kyle Beckerman.
That'd be a good answer.
Yeah, that would be a great answer. We've historically been a team that doesn't like to focus on one key player, sometimes to our detriment and sometimes not. Playing against New York Red Bulls, you know, when Thierry Henry was there, it was never like we have to, you know, put three bodies on Henry. And I mean, clearly they're different types of players, but it's that high profile, high class designated player situation that I think they're kind of comparable. I think the key would just be block the passing lanes, kind of clog things up. But you know, he's a good player. It's not going to work that way, right?
Yeah, we really hope that you don't concentrate on trying to stop him. That would be really helpful for us, I think.
I mean, is that something that's worked out for you in the past, where teams concentrate on Kaká and kind of shut you down?
I think there are teams that have tried to always put two to three guys on him whenever he's around the top of the box, and at times it has frustrated him, and at times he has made the other team pay dearly for that with a quick pass or a quick movement. It kind of just depends. I mean, he's really still learning the league and just now starting to figure out like sort of how he fits into it. So, which is, you know, it's kind of great for us when we think about it, because he's already, you know, third in the league in goals and has been playing very, very well at a high level for MLS. But, you know, Adrian Heath, our head coach, seems to think there's much more for him to give and that we'll see the best of him in the second half of the season after he's sort of gotten it all figured out. And he really did have a good game last week, but it's kind of hard to judge against Colorado Rapids.
That's fair. I can sympathize with that.
So, and I look at the Western Conference standings and I see Real Salt Lake in sort of an unfamiliar eighth place right now. I know the weekend there was a big draw against Columbus Crew, which we were kind of hoping you could maybe take all 3 points from them at that point.
That would have been nice.
And also maybe get a couple of their key players to take red cards would have been nice. But, well, this is a U.S. Open Cup week anyway for us against them. So it probably wouldn't have mattered unless, you know, like Higuain had ripped up the official's book or something.
That's true. I'm sorry there weren't any instances of that.
So what is what is the team's character this year? Because we're not used to seeing a Real Salt Lake at 5, 6, and 7 at this point in the season, and you know, really trying to catch up in the race with other teams in the West.
You know, I think that's something we're still trying to figure out as fan bases, or as a fan base here. And I think it's something the coaching staff is still trying to figure out too. It's always going to be hard when you lose some key players at the beginning of the season. We had Joao Plata out at the very beginning. We had Javier Morales out for 6-7 weeks. Actually, it wasn't that long, but it was some amount of time, and it felt like an eternity, so 6 or 7 weeks works for me. We've had Chris Schuler out for now an extended period, and there's a part of me that wants to say, like, you know, our character is there. The results aren't because mitigating factor A, B, and C. But it's tough. The coaching staff has openly talked about the confidence of these players sometimes being a little low. And that's not something we've ever really seen with Real Salt Lake since probably the 2008 season when they snuck into the playoffs. And I think maybe they were just on like a 6 or 7 year high from that, because it, you know, their confidence was not fragile. And maybe that's the result of having someone like Jason Kreis in your team, in your team, coaching your team in and around that environment. But it seemed fragile, I guess. But at the same time, the last few matches, it's looked better and it's picked up and it almost looks like a new dawn for that. But it, I don't know. That's the hardest part for me. I don't know. And I think it's perplexing basically the whole Salt Lake Valley right now. We can look at this team that's very talented on paper, that has some very promising players, has some solid veterans, and maybe it's missing a few pieces. But I think you'll see most teams in MLS miss, you know, one or two key pieces, and it's, I guess that's parity at work, but I don't know.
Well, you mentioned the you've got some good young up and coming players. What are some players that Orlando fans can look at that maybe that you guys know there that maybe we haven't heard of, as much about?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what we see in the lineup. Young players, you've probably seen Olmos Garcia for the goal on the set piece on Saturday.
Yeah, so that goal, yeah.
But he's a young player who has a, you know, great bursts of speed, but also struggles in front of goal and isn't always the most confident and will go down at the touch of a feather. And I think we're all comfortable admitting that here. So I suspect you'll hate him pretty quickly. And and I think it's kind of fun having a pantomime villain. So I hope you enjoy that. In the defense, it depends. One, we may have Elias Vasquez back, and he's a strong Guatemalan defender. He's like 22, has had a significant number of caps for the Guatemalan national team. It's hard to say whether he'll play in that match or if he'll be off for Gold Cup duty. I think that one's actually still up in the air. You might see someone like Justin Glad, who's an 18-year-old defender that looks really, you know, solid. And he's kind of twiggy in his size, but he's also, you know, very smart and reads the game well. You obviously know Luis Skill, and maybe in a different way than we do here. Because I think we see here a player that hasn't lived up to his potential, and maybe elsewhere you see a player with, you know, still a lot of potential. And of course you'll see the Platas, the Luke Mulholland, who are still pretty young players, but they're fairly well known within the league.
Definitely.
Yeah, I want to talk about Luke Mulholland because I base this on absolutely nothing, but when I see Luke Mulholland, I think he is the MLS player who looks most like he should be a character on Game of Thrones.
Oh. Ray also, like on Twitter, actually loves to float around a nice Photoshop version of Kyle Beckerman on like a throne, and that kind of works for me. I'll be honest here. I actually have not watched much Game of Thrones, and I know I should be lambasted for it, but I just haven't.
Like, I base it on nothing other than I think, man, if he was in one of those period costumes, he would look the part. That's all I'm saying.
We'll see if we can get him in one.
That'd be great. No. You mentioned the free kick goal the other night against Columbus, which was freaking amazing. I believe it was a three-touch deal after the original free kick to get the goal. If people that are listening don't know it, just Google training ground free kick Real Salt Lake and it'll pop up. It was really amazing. I mean, is it normal for that kind of free kick to come out for Real Salt Lake? Are they a creative, inventive sort of attacking force, or was that a real kind of came out of nowhere kind of thing?
I think the answer is both. Like, there's a reason that goal is making the rounds, and it's because that's really remarkable. Like the intricate nature of it is. You just don't expect to see that, I guess. And it worked out perfectly. But it's not, like, totally foreign to this team either. Seeing that goal in person, it didn't shock me. I was surprised that it worked out so well. But to see us try something like that, I don't think is that unusual. And what's interesting about that goal for me is that it came with Javier Morales out of the side. And in that range, you'd see Javier Morales shoot and, you know, potentially score that goal. In a pretty straightforward fashion with just a great free kick. But when he's not there to orchestrate that sort of, you know, magnificence, it's still a very creative side, and we see things like that regularly. obviously they don't always work out. I think everything has to go right for a goal like that. And when it does, it does. And it's, I don't know. It's particularly interesting for me because under Jason Christ, Real Salt Lake famously didn't really practice set pieces. Defending, attacking, it didn't really matter. The focus was always somewhere else in training. When Jeff Kassar took over, and you know, we could debate to the end of days whether that was a a good decision by our ownership or not. But the biggest thing I've seen, aside from signing some great young players, Jordan Allen is a great one, who you won't get to see, by the way, because he did pick up a red card, quite distressingly. But yeah, it's a really creative team, and I guess that's, I don't know. And to see them actually practice set pieces and apply their creativity to that is, I don't know, it's really cool to see. And I know the season isn't going particularly well in some ways. But if we just have a few more goals like that, maybe it's just, it's not totally a wash.
So definitely that's, yeah. So set a tone for July 4th, you know, the kind of, we don't really know this, you know, we've seen, you know, you guys play on TV, obviously, but for our fans, you know, what's the stadium going to feel like on July 4th with Kaká in town and, you know, a big important game for both teams?
Well, it's interesting because on, you know, these July 4th matches, you do get a lot of fans who wouldn't normally be there otherwise. Because we put on a fireworks show and that's a big draw when you can get your whole family there. But at the same time, it'll be hot. It won't be humid. So I hope you like dry heat, because that's probably what you're going to get 100 degrees of on Saturday. And you'll have a whole stadium of people who, maybe not a whole stadium, a stadium of like 70% of the crowd who just wants to hate Kaká. And it's that, like, that desire to hate that famous player, that'll make it kind of fun, I think. You'll probably hear Kaká's touches booed from the beginning, not because he's done anything wrong, just because he's there. It's fun, it's fascinating to, like, watch and participate in and try to understand. But I think it's just, like, there's this anti-authoritarian streak in parts of Utah that just really manifests themselves really well in these game time situations.
Well, I know it's other fan bases have tried, but it's really hard to hate Kaká.
It really is.
I think it was San Jose that wrote a column about that, about how I've tried to hate him, but I can't. And he's not a diver, so that kind of helps. I guess we'll see what happens on Saturday night, July 4th. Looking forward to it. Not looking forward to losing sleep, but I will stay up for the game covering that thing. And before we let you get out of here, Matt, we got to get your final score prediction for Saturday night.
So historically, I've always predicted 3-0 to Real Salt Lake, never for any good reason. I'm going to do the same, and I still don't have a great reason, but it just feels like we're just due a win that's not nervy, that's not, like, awful, that, you know, it seems like we actually deserve. And we're sitting here with 5 wins from now 18 games, and it's frustrating. And having, like, that substantial victory over a team that's, you know, not doing so badly, especially for an expansion team, it would just be, I don't know, it might be the shot in the arm we need, whether that's as a team or whether that's as a fan base, remains to be seen. But I just want a little fun.
Fair enough. Well, the road record for Orlando City is not bad overall. It hasn't been as good in recent weeks. But the team does have a very good record against the Western Conference, surprisingly enough. Only Vancouver has bested Orlando City from the West so far.
Well, I hope we can change that record just ever so slightly.
They got a goal in the 6th minute of 4 minutes of stoppage time to do it. So... so we got MLS'd a little bit, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Matt Montgomery, managing editor of RSL Soapbox. Thanks so much for being with us, telling us a little bit about your club, and we look forward to seeing you through the years now that we're joined the club in MLS.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, well, it's just about time to call it a podcast. We want to thank our guest this week again, Matt Montgomery, managing editor of RSL Soapbox. I thought he did a good job of explaining his team to us.
Yeah, he's good. He's a talker. He had a lot to say, and he seemed like a good soccer intellectual. So I hope we can talk to him again one day. I liked him.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the great thing about our SB Nation fellow bloggers is that they're all really helpful, and they're all very passionate about their teams. So I'm sure we'll be talking to Matt again in the future. Who knows? Maybe we'll meet up with them again in the postseason or in the U.S. Open Cup. I don't even know if they're still in the U.S.
They're,
Open Cup.
They're in it tonight. So they might not be in the morning. I think they're down the KC right now, actually. I think Tom Dwyer's.
A great rivalry, too. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen a Rail Salt Lake Sporting KC game, I highly recommend them. There was one just a week or two ago that I watched, which was just a nuts crazy game. Really fun to watch. So let's turn our attention to Rail Salt Lake. Before we get to our predictions, I just wanted to ask you what you think is the big sort of matchup between the two teams, like the big battle.
The thing that I think, and this is my standard answer, but I think the midfield. I think that Orlando has to win the midfield to win the game. That's where our strength is. That's where our best players are. You know, we've talked this whole podcast. We've talked about midfielders. And I think that we have to win the midfield. If we don't exploit the ability of Kaká, Arribas, you know, Neal if he plays, Seren won't be there, so it'll be interesting to see who steps in for him as well. Higuita has had great games recently, so I think if those players play well, we do good. Beyond that, and I think the back line, the back line's going to do well. So, and in the front, too, I think that Pedro's got to step up. So, yeah, that's going to be a big game for us, evidently. So,
I was actually going to bring up Pedro. I'm glad you brought him up because I was going to say he's had a couple of, somewhat quiet games the last couple of games. And I think with Laren going to be out an extended time, he really needs to step up and become more threatening.
I agree.
On the front for Orlando City, because otherwise Adrian Heath's going to have no choice but to move Rivas up there, because there's really no other option right now until Brian Rochez gets his visa situation straightened out. And by the way, that's something we haven't talked about, is Brian Rochez has been gone a long time. I was told by someone who should know that Carlos had a little issue because he lost his visa. He lost his passport. Apparently at the New Zealand World Cup. So when you're a Colombian in New Zealand and you need to get back to the United States, there's a whole lot of red tape.
Yeah.
And if you don't have your paperwork in order, there can be some problems there. So hopefully he'll get that ironed out, because this is really an important stretch of games for where he could, really cement his place in the squad. So it's important for him to get back. But I really think Ribeiro needs to step up and he's always very solid, but sometimes he's exceptionally good, and he needs to go back to being exceptionally good for a few games at least and solidify that striker position. I think you're right. I think the midfield is going to be very important, and it's not going to take for granted that Kyle Beckerman's going to be out, because
yeah. –
Real Salt Lake has some good players, and they know how to play their system very well. So, not having Beckerman is probably helpful, but maybe not as big a bonus as we think,
right,
because his backup's going to be playing well too. I see Christian Higuita obviously starting. I think we might see Avila play right wing and Neal play with Higuita, but I do think that Amobi Okugo played very well in relief, particularly against Columbus, and so he may be starting to play himself back into favor with Adrian Heath.
Yeah.
So he actually might get a start.
He could use it. I thought he played real well in the early season, so I'd like to see him come back into form.
And it's very important to keep him healthy, because the fact of the matter is, we're not sure when Aurelia Collin will be back.
Right.
And so you got Seb Hines and Sean St. Ledger. So the emergency center back right now is Amobi Okugo. People say, what about Connor Donovan? Connor Donovan cracked his elbow in the Charleston game, so he's going to be out like a month. Tommy Redding is not ready. Akugo's a very valuable guy. You've got to keep him healthy, and this is a very important stretch of games. The cool thing is that the window, the transfer summer transfer window, opens on July 8th, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. 6th or 8th, one of the two, yeah.
So we could see some movement. Maybe we'll even see a very famous Mexican player come to Orlando.
Nobody said no yet. That's what I keep thinking. No one says no. Everyone just says, well, kind of, but we're open to it. That's all I ever say. So I keep thinking that it's in the works.
Right. So, I mean, we're hearing that Gio Dos Santos is extremely close to maybe signing with L.A. If that happens, then there must obviously be some kind of mechanism in place in terms of a DP addition of some sort.
Right. A fourth team, yeah.
Right. And if that core DP thing happens like we think it's going to happen, then that might be an opportunity for Orlando to slide a Rivas or a Rochez into the core DP and sign a player. And they're not shy about throwing some money around, and they've made no secret that they want Javier Chicharito Hernandez.
Yeah, I think, and you know, I've said this before, I think he really fits into our system very, very well. Heath likes a striker, like the way he plays. He's not a striker that waits for the ball. He's not a striker that waits for you to set him up. He's a striker that involves himself in the offense, and I can really see him linking up well with Shea and Kaká, Rivas. I think that's a dangerous, dangerous front line there. You know, all those guys up there with the ball and tick-and-tacking, and I think that'd be really, really a great, great lineup for us. So,
yeah, the critics will tell you that he doesn't create his own chances, and my response to that is that's not going to be his role in this offense.
Right.
Kaká and Rivas and whoever plays on the right and our fullbacks, they're the ones that are going to distribute. He's just got to finish.
And get in the position. And he's really good. And as we've seen at Manchester United, he gets in the position to finish very, very well. He's pulled some very amazing goals out that I don't know how he got to him. So.
Now, I will caution fans that hate offside. He goes offside a lot.
He does.
I mean, he pushes the boundary, and sometimes it's intentional. Take a couple early, maybe get the defense to fall asleep a little bit and, you know, not worry so much about you because you think you're going to be offside, and then boom, next thing you know, he's 6 yards behind you. And onside. So if you don't like players that are offside a lot, you're not going to like Chicharito. You might like him when he starts scoring goals and you know, buckets of goals. So we'll see how this whole thing happens. I mean, it wouldn't be the craziest thing if they signed him.
No, it wouldn't, no. I think a player like Chicharito, you know, he's a player that could play anywhere in Europe, but I don't think he wants to play just anywhere. I don't think he wants to play for, you know, Stoke City or Everton. Not to pick on those clubs. They're great clubs. I actually love both those clubs. I don't think he wants to play it in an average team that's not really going places. I think he wants to win trophies. And I think you could see him doing that in MLS, definitely. So.
Yeah, his first choice was to go back to Real Madrid. Yeah. And that wasn't, you know, they didn't renew the loan. They didn't have any interest in that. His apparent time at Manchester United is done. They're I guess Louis Van Gaal is not a big fan of his, or they don't get along, or they just aren't right.
Who knows what
the
he
right
thinks
fit.
Of us anyway.
Right.
Kind of a mad
maybe,
man,
just,
so.
Maybe just not the right fit. But his agent has said they're not going to go anywhere else in England.
Right.
So that right there, that limits you. He's not going to Barca, and he's not going to Real Madrid. So that limits what you can do in terms of, you know, Spain, in terms of winning trophies. Because if you're not on one of those two teams coming up this year, you're not going to win any trophies.
Right.
So that just leaves Italy and Germany, you know.
And I think I could see him in Germany, to be honest. I think he could play very, very well in Germany. But
that's a very open style. It's an open league. I think he'd do well there. But I think he'd rather be – I think the lure of being closer to home might be enough if it's, like, between playing for Orlando or playing for, like, Dortmund.
Well, and you think about him, too. He's never actually been a consistent starter for an entire season. He's always been kind of a second choice or a third choice. And I think as a player, I think eventually you want to be a first choice. I think you want to be a player who plays week in and week out. And he may have kind of finally decided that as well. So,
yeah, I mean, at some point you don't want to be second fiddle.
Yeah.
You want to be the big fish, even if the pond is smaller. So, you know, Orlando's a great place for him to land. Right. A lot of Hispanics here, a lot of Spanish-speaking people. It's not that far to fly home for international stuff, you know, so I think it would benefit him. And, you know, clearly this is not a done deal and not even imminent at this point.
Yeah, we are talking about like it is, but it is not yet. So.
But, you know, it's just one of those things where – but it's also not just – you know, we're not just out there grasping at straws. Right. There is actual strong interest from the club in him. And even though he said in the past that he didn't want to come to MLS, you know, as those options that he were of where he wants to go sort of dry up and go away, you know, MLS becomes more attractive looking.
Well, and I think Kaká's an attractive person to play with as well. I mean, I think when you're looking at, you know, who you want to play next to, certainly probably one of the nicest guys I've ever seen play the game. And I think there's a lot of reasons to play. I mean, I'm a little biased, probably, but there are a lot of reasons to play for Orlando that I think are very good reasons. So.
Yeah, and players want to play for clubs with ambition, and this is a club that has ambition.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll see how it happens, but right now we're gonna before we get out of here, we're gonna go to our soon to be proven completely wrong prediction for the Orlando City RSL match on Saturday. Kevin, what do you got?
I think it's going to be a fireworks show. I'm going to go 3-2 Orlando.
High scoring. Okay. Okay. I like it. I like it. I think that it's a dry heat out there in Salt Lake
City. Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit different environment. I think Rio Tinto is a very difficult place to play. I'm going to say it's a 2-2 draw with Orlando City having to come back and poach one at the end to get the point, to salvage the point. I think for a couple of reasons, Real Salt Lake's been pretty strong at home defensively for the most part, and also they've tended to give up some late goals.
Yeah.
So, and Orlando City, let's face it, they've had some late game heroics. So it's just such a tough environment. It's a late start time for East Coasters. There's a lot of variables.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
I'm not sure what the altitude situation is in Salt Lake City, if I could speak. But I think you get a little bit of elevation, so you're going from sea level to you know, thinner air. It's going to be a tough game. It's a tough place to play. So you say 3-2, good guys. I'll say 2-2 draw. And we'll see what happens on Saturday. We'll both be completely incorrect.
I do need to issue a correction already. They're actually playing Portland tonight, and Sporting Kansas City beat Dallas 4-0. So I was sort of get for just trusting my Twitter feed only. So,
well, by the time this hits the internet, it'll be old news anyway.
Exactly.
So. So there you have it. It's a podcast. I do want to again thank our guest, Matt Montgomery from RSL Soapbox. You can follow them on Twitter. RSL Soapbox is the Twitter handle with the little at symbol before it, obviously. You know, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Please leave us some nice reviews and you know, give us a rating, a nice rating on iTunes, because that helps us in the search feature. Because we're not the only – I know it seems like we're the only Orlando City podcast, but we're really not.
Yeah, there's a couple of them actually.
We're just the most fun.
We are our favorite podcast about Orlando.
We are. This is our favorite podcast that we do. So for Kevin Mercer, I'm Michael Citro. We're going to see you next time. That'll wrap up episode 19, and we'll be back next week. To talk about how that RSL game went, and you know, we'll look ahead to the games to come. So until then, we're signing off with a big old Go City.
Go City.